This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 227 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Connor Allen of RotoWorld and the Quant Edge said it best on Twitter. He said, saying John Dorsey single-handedly turned around the Cleveland Browns is like calling Kylie Jenner a self-made billionaire. I couldn't believe the number of people who decided to trash Sashi Brown after Wednesday's big Odell Beckham trade. I know Sashi truthers love to make jokes about how he died so all of this could happen for Cleveland, but it just seems silly to me. Why are people making fun of Sashi Brown after this trade went down? Now, if you don't know anything about Brown, he was running the Browns front office from early 2016 through most of the 2017 season. And during that time, during those 2 years, the Browns went 1-31. So naturally, people like to shit on him. But he was there to completely tear down the Browns and build them back up. And the front office was using analytics to help guide those decisions. Not everything was done and made through numbers, but because of this mentality, they made interesting moves that sort of went against the conventional way of doing things. Basically, Sashi Brown blew up the team. The Browns traded back and acquired a lot of draft picks, they made trades that enabled them to have more draft picks, and they cleared up a hell of a lot of cap space. So when Brown was let go and John Dorsey came in, he had a lot to play with. He had to do something with all this equity, but he had a lot to play with. And from there, we know the story. Last year, it became evident to the NFL world that the real problem in Cleveland was Hugh Jackson, and they finally let him go. And then Baker Mayfield went on this tear under Freddie Kitchens, Kitchens got hired as the head coach, and now the Browns are making moves and have an awesome roster. This all happened in 3 years. Sashi took over in 2016, and now it's 2019, where the Browns are being bet on to win the freaking Super Bowl. To say that Sashi Brown had nothing to do with this rebuild is absolutely insane. It's nuts. It's completely ridiculous. The foundation for Dorsey was set by Sashi Brown. John Dorsey entered a situation that no GM has ever entered in NFL history. That's not even hyperbole. The Browns gave him more to work with from a cap space and draft equity standpoint than any other GM has ever seen. And this isn't to say that anyone could do what John Dorsey is currently doing. Not everyone would draft Baker Mayfield. Though I do have to add, it's also insane to think that Sashi wouldn't have Baker as his top quarterback, considering Mayfield was the analytical choice at the position last year. To assume that Sashi Brown would have taken Sam Darnold is foolish. But Dorsey made a strong move in getting Baker. We have to give him props for that. He got the deal done with OBJ. He's done things to improve the defense. Not all of his moves have been flawless, but overall, Dorsey's done a good job. I just don't understand why that means Sashi didn't do a good job in his short time. I don't understand why the two can't actually be a great marriage. That the Browns needed Sashi to break this team down, and then Dorsey helped build it back up. And honestly, if you want to just think of it in the most basic way, it really doesn't make sense at all to say that this is all John Dorsey, when Dorsey is using assets that were obtained by Sashi Brown. That's why Connor's Kylie Jenner analogy is so perfect. So I just wanted to say that to start the show. I could have started things off with some Dave Gettleman roasting, but I think I've done enough of that on the Late Round Podcast. Before we get going with today's mailbag questions, I wanted to demand you to create a free bracket before the start of the NCAA tournament to compete for a share of $250,000 in guaranteed cash prizes. Just go to FanDuel.com/madness. That's FanDuel.com/madness. Keep in mind that each user gets one bracket and you must be 21 years or older to play. No purchase necessary. See full terms and conditions at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. This first question is from @_EricSnyder_. What's your outlook and early prediction for Le'Veon Bell? So first and foremost, next week's early week podcast will be a big recap of everything free agency related. So I'm not covering everything today, and I'll probably end up reiterating some things next week, but I wanted to let you guys know that that's coming. But I mean, look, Le'Veon Bell was going to see volume no matter where he went. Like, I don't care about coordinator or coaching data when it comes to a team signing a decent-sized contract to a running back, at least as it pertains to running back volume. I really don't think that Adam Gase's running back history matters for Le'Veon Bell from a volume standpoint. So our expectation heading into free agency should have been that he's going to be a workhorse. And we should want him to be a workhorse on a good team with a good offensive line. That way he can be efficient and also score touchdowns. And I'm not sure this landing spot does that completely. Volume will allow Le'Veon Bell to be a serious fantasy football asset, but there are some obvious concerns. The offensive line is one of them. They should beef it up in the draft, but it's also a below average unit. And that was seen in 2018 when Jets running backs had the lowest success rate as a team in the entire NFL. You may say it's because they didn't have running backs, and maybe that can account for a portion of it. But we also know that offensive line play is a huge part of running back success. That's a big reason the position is so devalued in today's NFL. Rushing production is largely replaceable. So we've got a bad line that should probably create some inefficiency. But then there are scoring concerns as well. Sam Darnold should hypothetically take a step forward this year, but only five teams scored fewer offensive touchdowns than the Jets did last season. And one thing that I do think is relevant with Adam Gase is that his offenses have been oddly terrible in terms of goal line volume. They've been really bad in plays run per game, period. But in 2018, Miami ran the ball just two times within the opponent's five-yard line. That was by far the fewest in the league. It's almost hard to comprehend. In 2017, Miami ran six rushing plays at the goal line. That was also the lowest number in the league. Now in 2016, it was just a below average number at 19. So that's at least a good sign. But it goes to show how south this can go if the offense isn't able to move the ball that effectively. And not only that, but Miami also had the highest pass to rush attempt ratio at the goal line during this time. Over the last 2 years, they had a 3-to-1 pass to rush attempt ratio. That could be a philosophy thing, and that would hurt Le'Veon Bell. So if things go worse than expected, Le'Veon Bell's fantasy season could also be far worse than expected. We're not talking the Steelers here. We're not talking about a place where he had an elite offensive line and he was in an offense that was bound to be a top half one in the league. I wouldn't be surprised if I don't have a ton of Le'Veon Bell this year. This is on top of him not playing football for a year. I do think he can provide an obvious floor, but I'm not so sure if the market will project his ceiling properly. This next question is from @Cincy_Valentine. Best websites for which to source data when building your own projection models. Asking for a friend. Yeah, so there are lots of places to get data. Pro Football Reference is going to be your best bet because you can query specific things and uncover a lot of interesting trends. And all historical data is there. But there are sites where you can get more generic data like fantasydata.com. You'll want to grab as much historic data as you can find and then kind of go from there when you're building these projections. And if you're wondering where to even start, one of the first late round podcast episodes is actually about building projections. I had Mike Clay of ESPN on and it was on episode 12. This next question is from @PrivateParks. Am I crazy for being excited to see John Brown in Buffalo? Deep route guy with a big-armed QB. Could this finally be his breakout year? I think from a real football perspective, it makes sense. As you noted, you have a player who can spread the field and you have a big-armed quarterback in Josh Allen. Not only that, but Allen threw it deep a lot last year. Among all quarterbacks with 200 or more passes, Allen was first in percentage of throws that traveled 15 or more air yards. His rate of throwing it deep was actually the third highest since 2011. And by the way, the player with the highest rate of throwing it deep over this time span, Tim Tebow. I thought I'd throw that one out there. The problem is that he hasn't been accurate on those throws whatsoever. Josh Allen completed only 32% of his deep ball passes last season, which was only better than Ryan Tannehill. Maybe that had to do with personnel. I'm sure a lot of it did have to do with personnel. But in order for me to think that John Brown is going to have this breakout year, I'm going to have to buy into Josh Allen becoming significantly more accurate on those throws. And maybe even more importantly, I'm going to have to buy into the Bills being a lot more pass heavy, which is something I don't think will happen. I think the move makes a lot of sense for real football, but the fantasy numbers might be a little bit sporadic. And by the way, I'd say that John Brown already broke out. The dude has a 1,000-yard season. He's a great football player. This next question is from @CodwellFF. How do you feel about Winston's outlook under Bruce Arians? I've talked about this on the show before, but Winston's probably going to be one of my favorite late-round quarterback targets this year. DeSean Jackson being gone doesn't help things, but Tampa Bay was second in the league last year in fantasy points scored at the quarterback position, behind only Kansas City. It's a different regime now, but Arians is known for his vertical passing attack, and Winston and Fitzpatrick had one of the highest deep ball rates in football last season. It's really a great fit. And Winston's going to be fantasy relevant again in 2019, given the weapons he has, even if D-Jax isn't there. This next question is from @HelloMcFly. What production can we expect from AB in the Bay? Does this make Carr a streamer in 12-team leagues next year? First off, yeah, it definitely makes Derek Carr a streamer. Almost any quarterback is a viable streamer. My initial projection for Antonio Brown has him at 167 targets. That was actually more than I thought that he'd have, but it's less than what he had in Pittsburgh in 15 games last season. And the reason that's the case is because the Steelers were the most pass-heavy team in football, and I doubt Oakland is the most pass-heavy in 2019. So AB has to make up for the lack of overall offensive volume with a higher target share. And he should get that. But even if he gets to the 29% or even the 30% mark, which would end up being one of the highest marks in the league, you're looking at similar volume as he had in Pittsburgh. Now, the big issue I think that we may run into with AB is just general scoring. He definitely has a chance to get double-digit touchdowns, but he was going to regress in the touchdown column anyway after scoring 15 in 2018. This all means that Brown is probably still a wide receiver one in fantasy football, and I think it's for two main reasons. He'll see volume, but the wide receiver position is also pretty flat after the first part of your draft. Like, it would be hard to rank AB behind someone like T.Y. Hilton, for example. I do think there's downside here, though. Wide receivers switching teams usually don't perform as well, and Derek Carr is a downgrade from Ben Roethlisberger. So it could be worse than the projection is saying. It could also be better, though. That's why it's a projection. It's an average of the range of outcomes. But I think he's a lower-end wide receiver one in 2019. It's not bad, but it's not Pittsburgh Antonio Brown. This next question is from @JPH_GSG. Will excitement over the Browns' offense inflate the ADP of Landry and Mayfield so much that you won't be drafting them? I'm not sure where Landry's ADP will go, but he should still see about 120 to 130 targets. That's what my projections are currently showing. As for Baker, the unfortunate answer is that yes, I probably will be out on Baker Mayfield this year. It's just because of the late-round quarterback philosophy and the fact that quarterbacks aren't that important in fantasy. I don't think that we should just assume that he does what Pat Mahomes did last year. And remember, Mahomes wasn't any sort of early round selection. The risk was much different. I'm so ready for the Browns to be awesome to watch and for them to win, but quarterback is replaceable in fantasy football for the most part. And since Mayfield's ADP is going to significantly rise, that means that I'm out. This last question is from @KRStamps44. Does Odell Beckham move up in fantasy draft position after the trade to the Browns? So OBJ averaged about 10.5 targets per game over his last four seasons, so since his rookie year. He just hasn't played many full seasons over that time, so he's only hit 160 targets once. Now, I think it's very possible for him to get to that point this year. He may not be force-fed the same way that he was in New York, but Cleveland is likely to be more pass-heavy with the move, and I think we can be optimistic about the number of plays that they're going to run. Todd Monken's the offensive coordinator now, and over his last 3 years in Tampa Bay, they've ranked in the top 10 in seconds per play across the league in each of those seasons. So what that means is that we should probably see more passes in 2019 from Cleveland, but also they'll probably play at a decent pace. That brings a lot more pass attempts, and that brings targets. So it's entirely possible for OBJ to get to that 160 target mark. And if he gets there, he has a shot to be the top wide receiver in fantasy football with increased efficiency at quarterback. His ADP should rise after this trade as a result. I don't think I'm ready to put him at the wide receiver one spot for the season, but he can certainly be in that conversation. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you're on iTunes, please do me a favor and leave a rating and review. I'd greatly appreciate it. And I'm also on Twitter @LateRoundQB. If you have a question for a future mailbag show, you can hit me up on there or you can email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.